Listener Production. Nina Ayama is a comedian and TV star best known for her roles in Utopia, Taskmaster and Deadlock. She writes for TV, she's won a bunch of awards, and if you're thinking, massive overachiever, don't worry, that was my first thought too. So yes, she has an impressive CV, but what I found most impressive about her was her ability to gear change from talking about her life's greatest skill, which is holding a handstand for 2 minutes, and then diving straight into living with the depths of depression, and then throwing in what it was like to eat out of dumpsters as a broke artist, and then to be genuinely surprised about how she got there, discussing that. So we do cover a surprising amount of terrain when we sat down together for this chat. Later in the show, it is the weekend list, and that's where we recommend what to watch and see and do and eat and listen to and everything in between. But first, here is my chat with Nina Ayama. Nina, welcome to the Weekend Briefing.
Hello.
I have to begin by asking why you're carrying around what looks like something like a 12-year, like an iPad with a cover, a 12-year-old boy sits at a restaurant while his parents ignore him, and you've been communicating on it.
Look, I just really love watching Bluey. You know, I just can't get enough. On the train, Frozen, Disney movies, Candy Crush. I'm just obsessed. No, I've broken my phone and my iPad is like the next closest thing I have to a phone.
Yeah, right.
And so it's the only way I can communicate with the outside world. But I do look ridiculous. I look like an old lady. When I was doing comedy festival in Melbourne, all the Gen Z comedians called me Nana Nina because I would sit there like texting, but I'd use one finger. You know the one finger tap that like old, like people, I guess everyone using their iPad, but especially like, you know, Gen Xers and baby boomers, they have this one finger tap that's so dorky. And I was just doing it. I took pictures, you know, when they hold the iPad up to their faces and they do the big like.
Oh, you were taking selfies with the iPad?
Oh, I wasn't taking selfies, but I was taking pictures of people with an iPad. And I was just like, man, this has aged me up heaps.
So it sounds like this has been like, this is not just a 24-hour thing.
I dropped my phone somewhere in Melbourne in the rain and it was returned to me. I got it from the police station, but when it was returned to me, it was all like smashed up and had heaps of water damage. So
now you're saving up for a new phone?
Pretty much. So I guess I'm going to use my iPad forever. But the good thing is that Android people can't text me. That's not a good thing. That's actually a bad thing because a lot of important people are all on Android, but my mum can't text me. And I was telling my friend, she's like, oh, that's great. That's great enforced boundaries, you know.
Yeah.
She has to go through my partner. So she can't be mean directly to me. But I love my mum, but it was a cheeky little happy break for me.
What seems to be working for you? I'm so fascinated about your journey into comedy because if things had panned out a little bit differently, you were en route to become a dancer.
Oh, yeah.
So like Nina the ballerina?
Yeah, that was going to be me.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't a ballerina. I did competitive dance. I did a lot of like jazz and modern contemporary dance. I was in the Estedford group, but the main reason I was in the Estedford group was because I came from a gymnastics background, so I was like the person that could flip and stuff. And my other trick was that I could hold a handstand for like a really long time. Mm. Like I could hold a free handstand for about 2 minutes.
What a useful skill in life.
It really is, you know what? And it's gotten me into so many high-paying jobs. I put it on my resume. It's great. They employ me on the spot. They say, you don't have any skills, but you can hold a handstand for 2 minutes. Well, you're hired, become a stockbroker. no, but yeah, it's a good party trick at parties, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's where party tricks are useful. But yeah, I could do a handstand for 2 minutes. So what the dance group would do is make me do a handstand like before everyone else went on stage. And then I'll just hold a handstand for like 2 minutes of a 3 minute song. And they'll be like, whoa, how did you hold the handstand for so long? And then they could use, people would dance around me.
But that handstand came crashing down and so did the hopes of being a dancer and you became a comedian?
Sadly,
is that how it worked?
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm giving up on the handstand life. Yeah, and I became a comedian. I got a knee reconstruction. Sorry. I just have
that
broken so
many. That is an
old
person thing.
Thank you.
iPad.
Wow.
That and the iPad.
I'm so young. I'm like 30. Oh, God. No, I'm getting old. No, it is an old person thing. But to be fair, that happened when I was 16.
Oh,
so
wow.
I was already on my way to being Nana Nina from age 16. But yeah, I broke my leg when I was 16 dancing, and I broke my ACL, to be technical, the anterior cruciate ligament. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard ACL. I didn't know the full.
Well, now you do.
I do. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's best known for Sam Kerr broke her ACL,
yes.
I think. So me and Sam Kerr, same league, clearly. But yeah, I broke my anterior cruciate ligament, and then I just stayed in bed watching stand-up comedy for like 3 months and taking painkillers.
Right.
And I was probably on so many painkillers that I thought, wow, I could do comedy. And by the end of the 3 months, I was probably so deluded that I was like, let's go, let's try it out.
And then you did. You were just 17 when you did your first stand-up.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went really well from memory. It was at a comedy competition.
From a drug-induced.
Well, I wasn't on that. I wasn't on them by that stage. I was well off them. I remember I don't like Panadeine Fort that much. I'm more of an Endone girl now myself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think during the time I convinced myself I could do it over those 3 months. And then when I finally got to do it, I was like, yeah. But it went well. I was in a competition, came runner up.
Great.
So that's pretty sweet. And yeah, and then the next gigs I did after that were terrible and I bombed. That's comedian speak for sucked.
How do you recover from that? Because I'm told there's nothing more terrifying than being on stage and a joke not landing. And then not only that, having to then continue the whole show.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks. It is the worst feeling in the world. But I think you can just, I don't know, I don't bomb as much now because it's like, I think once you've done stand-up for a certain period of time, you're able to sort of like riff your way out of a situation. But the best way to get over a bomb is to get back up and do another gig because then you can replace the memory of, not getting laughs. It's the most painful thing. I think everyone's like, oh, like I would never do stand-up because what if I got up there and like never got any laughs? But I think also part of part of what makes you a stronger comedian is that you do go up on stage and some jokes don't work and you just have to deal with that and it makes you stronger because you go back and you go, why doesn't this joke work? Is it even a good joke? Most of the time that means it's not a good joke.
Can't you just blame the audience?
I mean,
well, aren't there some times where the room is different? I'm imagining.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I sometimes blame my audience, but I'm also just like, I think there are also different demographics. So I feel like
that's what I mean more. Like room, it didn't land with that room.
Yes.
Because perhaps that joke wasn't as well catered for that room.
Yes. I think there's definitely that, but I think you can get in a danger zone of like blaming the audience.
Yes.
Like I think it's like a bad craftsman always blames his tools, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, but I think the thing that sucks about being a comedian is you have to practice in front of an audience. Like imagine if you were a singer or imagine if you were learning the violin, like, and you had to, every time you played the violin, you had to do it in front of an audience or you wouldn't know if you were good or not. Like that's just humiliating. No one's good at the violin at the beginning.
Yeah.
Everyone has like notes that sound bad for years and years and years. So.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess maybe a different thing is with the violin, there's tuition and practice and then at some point somebody's like, you are now ready for your first performance.
Yeah, true.
But that kind of doesn't happen.
No, you just get thrown into the deep end.
What I love about your comedy is that it's not necessarily gentle or family friendly.
Oh, no, it's...
which is fabulous. And there's this one review in Time Out. It is filthy, whip smart and screamingly funny.
I'll take that.
You'll take that.
Yeah.
And so given the fact that it is not family friendly, how do you feel about babies in the audience?
Oh my God.
Right?
I should have known I would be asked this question.
It has to. I have to.
I mean like, yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, but I think if the baby's being disruptive, oh, I should have come with like a bunch of funny quips on this because I would, of course I knew this question was going to be asked. I think like if the baby's being disruptive, then you have a right to ask people to leave. But I don't think, if the baby's
been... But audience is sometimes disruptive and...
Oh, and then you have the right to ask them to leave too. I think the problem is you can tell a disruptive audience member, please be quiet, you're being disruptive. But if you tell a baby, please be quiet, you're being disruptive, that baby doesn't understand what you're saying and it won't, be quiet. Because if you have a disruptive audience member, you have a way of communicating with them, and if they continue to be disruptive, then you can take them out.
Have you done that? Have you asked an audience member to leave?
Not in recent years, no. I just ask people to be quiet, and usually my audiences are nice enough that they right. are. So, yeah.
And I guess going back to your earlier point of the painstaking rehearsals, remembering your script and your line, do you empathise with the pressure up there to keep going and keep the performance going without distractions?
Yeah, I think I do. I think it's sort of hard to... It's just being heckled by a baby, man. That's got to be... That's the worst kind of heckle ever. I think it's fine. I think people should be able to breastfeed in public, and I think they should be able to, bring their babies everywhere they would like. But, yeah, I will say, probably a comedy night, not the best night, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We want that honesty. And the truth is they are... advertised as 18 plus for the very reason of the sort of content that is covered and the language and all the rest and alcohol being served.
Yeah, of course. How did a baby even get let into the venue? was it drinking a whiskey?
Exactly. So many unanswered questions. We need four corners onto this to find out the truth.
Absolutely. Baby gate. Let's get on it.
I noticed your T-shirt. Which says, I am actually bisexual, and it has three dot points and then a question mark. I'm like, is this a statement? Is this a question? Who's confused?
My partner made it for me. We went through a phase where we just kept saying funny phrases, and then we'd be like, oh, we should put that on a T-shirt. A lot of them are quite rude, so a lot of them didn't make it to T-shirts, but this one did, and I think it's pretty funny. I don't know. So my partner's male.
Yes.
And he also wears this shirt, and he seems pretty straight, but he doesn't seem that straight. He's very fruity. But I don't know. It's a kind of funny shirt we just thought it would be a funny shirt.
To confuse people?
Well, I don't know. It says I'm bisexual, actually. So it's sort of or does that say I'm actually bisexual?
It says I'm actually bisexual, but it has, that's three dot points afterwards and then a question mark.
Okay.
So I have grammar questions, I have sexuality questions, I have so many questions.
Yeah, well, bisexuals, it is a very confused shirt. I think it's the way that whenever I see ... question mark, maybe it's because I write for screen, and so whenever I see that written, I always see it with an upwards inflection. So it's I'm actually bisexual.
All right. And so then it sounds like a question because of the inflection.
Yeah, but it also sounds bitchy. It's I'm actually bisexual.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Your sexuality and making jokes about sexuality or playing characters whose sexuality is, part of their comedy is something that, as a viewer and observer and consumer of your comedy, I've really enjoyed. In Deadlock, which is the Tasmanian comedy murder mystery, you play Abby. Tell us what's fun about that role.
Oh my God, I love playing Abby, speaking of upwards inflections. But she, when I first got that script, I felt like her voice sort of just jumped off the page for me, and the way that she was supposed to be speaking, because she speaks I wonder if I can do it now. I haven't been Abby in so long.
Well, know what? We have prepared something a little bit earlier.
Oh, okay.
What do you think makes Deadlock so special?
That it's gay, lesbians. That's the secret ingredient. Everyone's why is it so good? Lesbians. Lesbians. Hire more lesbians. Lesbians. Lesbians.
Oh my God, that clip. That's from the Logies. Oh my God. Do you know, it's so funny because have you walked the Logies red carpet before? Is that a weird thing to say?
I haven't.
Oh my God, you should totally do it, babes. You would crush it.
Yeah, I love that.
But also you just walking around this big carpet and it goes forever. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like the slowest process. Like, you're all animals, sexy, hot animals that are dressed in like the most fanciest clothes ever. And you're walking through at like a snail's pace and there are just people shoving microphones in your face and you're just getting pushed towards them. And I was like, well, I'm nobody. Like, nobody will ever watch my little clip. And so I was just saying random stuff. And then that one went viral and I was like, oh my God. And then the song happened and I was like, oh. Okay, but I'm pretty happy. It was pretty funny.
So who cut it? Who edited it?
Who edited it? I think I'm an artist called Candy Moore.
Right.
Who, their job, they are on TikTok and they make remixes of pop culture soundbites.
So do you stand by everything you said on the red
carpet? Oh my God, absolutely. Hire more lesbians. Like, I mean, I'm bisexual. Hire less bisexuals. We're terrible. No, but hire more lesbians. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And Deadlock, it was such a queer show. Like, it was just so gay. And I think for like the two lead actresses to be like openly lesbian and like, yeah, just like the writers as well. I don't know, just everyone is so queer. And like, I feel like Australia doesn't have gay TV shows. We just don't. Like, and Deadlock is one of them, but there should be more. Like, there should be more queer focused TV shows. So if anyone wants to hire me to write a TV show, I will. Fine. Oh my God, twist my arm. I'll write
a TV
show.
All right, you'll do it.
And I'll be in it. Oh my God, fine. I'll be in a TV. I'll be the star of a TV show. I'm not going to do that. That's too many spreadsheets. Right. But I will write it and I will be in it if I have to. Oh my God, stop making me do it. Oh my God, stop.
The phones won't stop ringing. Even your iPad's ringing.
My iPad is ringing. It's an audio FaceTime call.
Courtney in Utopia, oh my gosh, what I love about her is how she's perpetually confused.
She is so much. I love Courtney because she's sort of more focused on office social things than she is on getting work done for Tony, who's her boss, played by Rob Sitch. Yeah, she's always just kind of like, oh, I need to organise this birthday party. I need to pass around this card. What are we going to have Mexican night? Like, what's going to happen? And he's like, we need to do the work. And I think in that way, I'm a little bit like Courtney. I hate doing work. Except when it comes to acting, which is fun, and writing, which is fun, and stand-up, which is pretty... Okay, maybe I love work. Maybe I love work. But yeah, I love that Courtney's always like all about the office social scene as opposed to helping people do their actual job.
What is it about Australian TV writing that makes it so quintessentially Australian? Like, particularly with a show like Utopia, I just feel, I mean, I don't know what someone who's not Australian, how they would receive that. Like, what do you think about that style of TV, which is so, or the script writing that is so quintessentially Aussie?
Do you know what I think? I think it's the rhythms. Is that a weird thing to say?
No.
I think Utopia has like really good comedy rhythms and it's written by people who, I mean, it's like written by Rob and Sandro and Tom. Like it's just, they're people that have been doing it in this biz for ages and then it's delivered by comedians that are like Celia and Rob and Limo. Like it's sort of this perfect marriage of things that are funny and people that are funny. But I think, for me it's like the rhythms and sort of like the back and forths. And I think the thing that I love about Utopia, which is like everybody has a really good intent. Like everybody's just trying her best. Even Courtney is just trying her best. But because of the nature of who she is, she's just providing like absolute roadblocks to anything getting done. And I think that's sort of the thing I love about Utopia is it's like it's cynical but it's also got like a really big heart and a lot of goodwill towards characters who are, you know, I think in other TV shows might be painted as like evil or villainous or malevolent, but in Utopia they're just trying to do like the thing that they believe is right. And I think that that's a thing that Australians relate to as well, just trying to do the right thing. But sometimes we block progress from happening.
What do you mean by that?
I think like everyone, that's a great question. I don't know. I just think like nobody thinks they're the villain in their story. Like nobody broadly, especially like in this country, I find we're very defensive and self-righteous.
Yeah, that is, I know what you mean. It's like, no, but I am a good person.
Yeah, like, I didn't say this thing without meaning to be bad. It's like, yeah, but maybe you said something that hurt someone or did something bad. And it's like this ignorance that I think like a lot of people in Australia sort of, you know, operate on this level of sort of, I don't know, cognitive dissonance or something.
Yeah, like it's almost in some ways more offensive to be called a homophobe or yes. to be accused of doing something racist. Like, oh, I am horrified that you would suggest that I am homophobic.
Yeah.
You know.
How dare you ask me to change?
Yeah, like, and I am a good person.
I'm a good person. I wouldn't intentionally misgender someone. How dare you? It's like, just apologize and then don't do it again. Yeah, but everyone just gets so defensive.
Yeah, that's right. And then starts rattling off all of the good things they've done since, you know, circa 1987. You know, since 1987, I've spoken to 4 trans people and I didn't yell at any of them.
Yeah, some of my best friends are Asian. It's like, I don't care.
I think you've really nailed that there, that people, despite impact, can be quite focused on their intention. And I didn't intend to do that.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not really about your intention. It's about the hurt or the, I guess the, what's the word? I was going to say the action.
The impact?
The impact. Yes. Yeah. What you were saying. Yeah. Of that.
So I understand, like, you know, many Australians, you have gone out and sought, you know, some mental health support.
Oh yeah.
And you did that mental health referral plan and you thought you aced it.
Oh yeah. I smashed it. I got high marks, baby. I got 5, 5, 5, 5. Always, always, always. I am deeply mentally ill.
I mean, the Asian in you must be really proud
I got a high distinction.
You got real the high marks.
Yeah, but then I had to see a psychiatrist. So that was good. I suffer from like clinical depression and ADHD. I guess I don't suffer from it. I think it's my superpower.
Yeah, or you live with.
I live with it. And I mean, like, I love it. I mean, I love having ADHD. I don't love being depressed. It's a horrible feeling. But I think it's something that I've definitely learned to manage over time. Wow, a comedian being depressed, like, what a freaking cliche.
Yeah.
I think it's something that, like, definitely over the years I've had to reckon with and sort of, it's like a little beast and I just had to like tame it. It's like a little dog. It's like a mean, horrible dog in my brain. It's like a black dog, if you will.
Oh.
And I've just had to like train it by giving it little treats or whatever over time. And now it's less, it doesn't bite me as much.
Oh, that's good. So just tiny little, like little bite marks, but not tearing out a chunk of your calf.
Well, I think like I've been reading that, what's that book? The Body Keeps the Score. And it's about how like, trauma, how like a lot of, and like trauma is such a buzzy word right now, but I guess like if you go through life and experience certain experiences, that's going to impact you and inform the way that you approach the world and also yourself. Mm. And I think that like if you're a young kid or like, and certain things happen to you, or like people say certain things to you or, you know, you grow up in a certain way, your worldview becomes very narrow and your view about yourself becomes very narrow. Like for a long time, I just thought I was worthless. Is that a really crazy thing to say?
No.
Yeah, I just thought that I was like, I just thought that I was worthless and I thought like nobody would ever love me and I thought that I was like fundamentally unlovable and that like because of I believe those things about myself, the way that I approached the world was like, very destructive, I'd say. And I think that like definitely in the last couple of years, I've been like more gentle with myself and more like accepting. And I think a lot of that is just like my career is going pretty well. So it's lucky that I do a thing that I love and now I feel affirmed in my decision to choose like comedy as a career. And then I also feel affirmed, like this year I won an award for screenwriting and a show that I co-created won like an actor award. I was nominated for an acting award. So I'm like, okay, like I'm actually good at the things that I'm doing. I don't have to hate myself so much or feel like an imposter. Like there was just like a lot of things. Also when I was 28 years old, I finally made enough money to like live and eat and pay rent and then be able to buy clothes that weren't on sale. And honey, that like also changed my entire life because instead of worrying about like having to get food, I was like, oh, I can buy from Sephora. And I think that sort of also like helped my mental health get better. I think a lot of it is just money actually.
Anyone who said money can't buy happiness
is such a liar. Like, anyone that says money can't buy happiness has never been poor. Like has never been properly poor. Like I used to eat out of the bin. Like when I was a teenager because I just couldn't afford proper food so I would go dumpster diving and just was living hand to mouth for such a long time.
And now you're on red carpet screaming lesbians.
I am.
I am more lesbians.
You know, I've come such a long way. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, I don't have that much money now, but I live comfortably, which is such a difference. And I think it makes such a difference to your mental health to be able to access resources and pay whatever, $1 million for a psychiatrist or $1 million for a gynecologist. Like this year, last year, I found out I had ovarian cysts and I was able to get a surgery to get them out and like able to, I got diagnosed with endometriosis and now I can like go to the doctor and pay for medication. And like even all that stuff is making my own worldview like broader because my brain isn't being like, you have to be in pain all the time. It's like, no, there's solves. There's solves for those pains. I also think when you're in pain all the time, it makes you a really angry person. I think for a long time I was very angry and I was upset at like a lot of things in life. And now I feel like broadly more chill, I guess.
That's amazing.
Is that okay?
Thank you for that.
Like I've bared my soul in like 5 minutes. Anyway, yeah.
Thank you for being sort of really vulnerable and honest about that journey. I did notice that things started, well, your mental health and the way in which you managed it became a little bit easier as you made more money, understandable, as you had more career success. Do you ever wonder or fear that maybe next year or the year after, should your career take another turn, how that may influence your mental health? Because obviously I too am in a public role where affirmations and social media engagement and awards, like this is what we strive for and unfortunately live for. When that goes away, not only is it something you grapple with personally, everybody else knows that
you were a has-been.
Yeah, you're not acing it anymore or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would just like to enjoy what I do. I think that's sort of like what I want. Yeah. And I think that one of the good things about my career getting better is that I have had the liberty of choice. Like I think there's definitely like TV shows that I haven't enjoyed working on in the past, but I worked on because I was like, I needed the money or I needed the experience or whatever. And now I have the liberty of choice. So even if I work on TV shows that don't like win, I don't want to be like, never want to win an award. I was always like, I don't care, awards aren't for me. And then I won an award and I'm like, oh my God.
You want all of them now.
I don't want all of them, but it felt nice. And I think now my attitude is sort of like, well, that was a nice thing that happened. Sure. Don't let it get to your head and just keep working hard. And I think the thing that was really validating for the awards that I like got to be a part of was that they were all on shows that I loved making. Like SBS Latecomers, I co-created with my friends Angus Thompson and Emma Myers. And it was about, they both have cerebral palsy and the show was about people with cerebral palsy having sex for the first time. And I think it's a really beautiful show and I think it's a really important show and I'm really glad that it was made. And even if we didn't win awards for it, like it would be something that I'm still so proud of. And same with Koala Man, which is the one that I wrote that I got like an animation writing award for this year. And I'm so proud of my work on that and on Deadlock. Like I think those awards in those situations were just bonuses. And so I think for me, like as long as I'm working on things that fulfill me, whether I get recognised for them or not, it's more like I just want to be proud of my work and like not afraid to tell people and show people what I can do.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to wrap things up. Thank you so much for your honesty, your vulnerability and the laughs, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Oh, thank you. I'll see you soon.
It is time for the weekend list. I'm joined by the fabulous and always creative Helen Smith, who shocks me every week with the things that she wants to recommend. Helen, shock away.
Okay. I think this is not that shocking.
Is it going to blow my socks off?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think you're going to keep your socks on with this one.
Okay.
So my recommendation is giving a little more love to our feet.
Okay.
Because I feel like we always neglect it. Like we'll, you know, do all our skincare and we put our hair moisturizers, like lotions. We've got everything going on. But then our poor little feet that we walk around in all day, I think sometimes get forgotten.
Yes.
So my recommendation is a nice cooling like peppermint foot lotion, or you can just use any kind of moisturizer lotion.
Yeah.
And just after you've had a shower or whatever, just before you go to bed, slathering that on and then popping some socks on and sleeping in your, it feels a bit weird, but it's like the slathered lotion feet.
And that holds all the moisture in.
And it holds all the moisture in. And yeah. then you wake up and your feet are like baby soft.
Yeah. I do love that. And I'm going to say, I already do that. So I do keep my socks on. So I didn't blow my socks off. I use heel balm so that my bottom of my heels so aren't cracked. However, I love sleeping with socks on, even if it's 35 degrees. Some people can't sleep.
See, I hate it.
Yeah, some people cannot sleep with socks on. Yeah. So it might be, you know, a bit of a challenge for those people.
It is a challenge, but I'm just thinking of the reward.
Yeah, like, fair enough. Nice. I like that commitment to soft, good feet.
But that's my recommendation.
So my recommendation is Usher. The R&B crooner from the United States. So he has a new album out, which I listened to on repeat. And he hasn't released an album in 8 years.
I was literally, when you said this before, I was thinking, Usher is still doing music?
Yeah, he's still quite young. He's only early 40s. It's just that he peaked so early. He was so young when he peaked. And so people just assume sort of he's gone and retired. But I think he's only like 44.
Okay, yeah.
I love it. What Usher is able to do is not only like make me want to shag him every song, even though I don't think he's hot or whatever, but he's just so like sexy and alluring with his music. He just makes me feel so much. And so,
did you watch his Super Bowl performance?
No, I didn't.
Oh my God, you would love that. He was on the roller skates and everything.
Okay, I'm going to
have to
watch
that. You have to watch that.
I'm going to have to watch that. My favourite track on his album Coming Home is called Ruin. It's just so emotive and so romantic. And anyway, I love it. So Usher, for any of those fans from the late 90s or early noughties, I think he's back with a vengeance and arguably some of his best songs.
I love that. I'm definitely checking that out. So my second recommendation is a two-part Scandal series from Shameless, the podcast with Michelle and Zara. And it is about Clara Bow. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know Clara Bow existed. I didn't know who this person was. And she actually inspired a Taylor Swift song on her new album.
Okay.
Like she was the original It Girl from a movie in 1927 called It. Like she was born in 1905.
Proper It Girl.
Like OG It Girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And she, her life story is wild. She was also one of the original Flapper girls, like in that Flapper
era.
So she was a Flapper girl. She was a sex icon. She was engaged like 3 or 4 times and she made her fame and her star. She became a star in the silent films. And then it goes through her transition into the talkies where they started to have sound.
Did you love it because you'd never heard of her or because she'd had her such an story amazing is, night?
Yeah. Okay. Her whole story is just, she's just one of those OG movie stars and you're just thinking, wow, back in the day, like acting without a voice.
And also just being a woman in 1905 or the early 20th century and navigating film and navigating all the hurdles
And
of just being a woman in that space.
Honestly.
Okay, interesting. My last recommendation is interesting for me, may not be interesting for those who are forced to take part in it. I am looking for lots of ways to laugh or to find kind of light. Like I'm really trying all sorts of things. And so the latest thing I've been doing is making up names when people ask for coffee orders. So I never say Antoinette because I don't know how to say Antoinette. And so I usually go by Tony. Like they don't know how to spell Antoinette or they go, how do you do it? Anyway, the last time I said Tony, the guy was like, Tony, that's a boy's name. Tony, that doesn't suit you. And so I was like, Antoinette. And then he ended up, he's like, I know how to spell it. And then he butchered my name. And so this whole exchange, he was quite invested in how my name might be spelt. And so there on in, I started being like, they're like, what's your name? I'm like, Gertrude.
Gertrude.
Beatrice. Shaniqua. Falala. I've just been, it cracks me up.
Oh my God. And you're the only one in on the joke though.
I'm the only one in on the joke. It's a comedy festival for one.
That is so funny.
And I love it. But the looks I get from the baristas, they're like, Gertrude? And I'm like, yes, 2 R's.
I
recommend you try it.
Okay, I will try this.
And just come up with the most outrageous names that you would never.
Do you know my dad wanted to call me Brunhilda?
Well, there you are.
There we go.
That's your coffee name.
That's my coffee name, Brunhilda.
Because there would be like plenty of, you know, Kates and Sarahs and pronounceable lovely names. Oh, Helen. Jessica, Helen.
Yeah.
So like try that.
I love this.
Try Beatrice.
Everyone's going to think we're mad.
That is my recommendation because laughter's the best medicine, we're told.
It is.
I mean, after coffee.
Yeah. After coffee.
Coffee and laughter.
Oh, great. I love that one.
That is it for this week. Thank you so much for being with us and tuning in. It is always a pleasure. And if you want more of The Weekend Briefing, you can find us on the Listener app. Download the Listener app in the App Store. Follow us there. Otherwise, you can follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. And why not give us a rating and a review for this fabulous interview with Nina? And if you're feeling super generous, you can review and rate every episode. And tomorrow, Tom has a super interesting interview with Junkee Media founder Tim Duggan. I'll catch you next week. Listener.